Podcast, the home of everything progressive and underground right here in Australia. My name is Alex Hogg. Every fortnight, I'm joined by Mr. Dave Ellis. Hello, Dave.
G'day, g'day. And I think it's been slightly over a fortnight this time around. We're still working into these new schedules of ours.
New schedules of mine. Let's just lay the blame squarely where it is.
Oh, there's that. But I've got rehearsals and such as well. So, you know, we're sort of a couple of nights are out and then you've got yours and da-da-da. It's just bit of a perfect storm, but you know what? It's been a pretty whirlwindy couple of weeks, to be really honest with you. I think for both of us, how have you been? Is work still treating you as well as it was, or?
Oh, as much as one can do when you work a couple of hundred hours over 3 weeks, but yeah.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah. So we're going to jump into some follow-up, mm-hmm. and we have a piece of listener follow-up from John Agnes. Thank you very much, John, for sending in your piece of feedback to us. Now, he mentioned that I think one of either you or I in the last episode where we kind of dunked on Stephen Wilson for an entire episode, mm-hmm. one of us mentioned that, you know, John Wesley played some guitar on some Porcupine Tree records.
Yes.
He corrected us in saying that Stephen Wilson played all the guitars on the Porcupine Tree records. You are 100% correct, John. However, John Wesley did play pretty much all the guitars live. Stephen Wilson did play a little bit here and there, but basically all the big guitar solos that you hear on the records, that was all John Wesley.
Yes, that is correct. He would often play, you know, acoustic at the front. He being Stephen would often play the acoustic at the front, or, you know, second to guitar and so on and so forth. Occasionally do a little bit of lead work and so on and so forth. But it was John Wesley pretty much who did a lot of that stuff. But thank you for the feedback. Now, we did actually get a lot of feedback from that that episode. My God, who would have thought that Stephen Wilson fans could be so annoyed at people telling them that Stephen Wilson is not prog? Who could have seen that one coming?
Yeah, but also as well, you know, you get the converse to that of like people who are just like dunking on the record because it's not like the Raven Part 2 or something, which like we all knew that was coming. He's never going to stay in the same place and do a record more than once. Mm-hmm. It's been evident through his whole career. So anyway.
But either which way, I mean, we enjoy the interaction either which way it goes. So send us more, please.
Absolutely.
We do enjoy it. Now, Hoggy, you got something in here about another podcast called Citations Needed.
Now,
in particular, the 129th episode.
Yeah, we spoke on the last episode about vaccines and the need basically for the vaccine to roll out all over the world for touring to happen. Mm-hmm. Since recording that episode, I've listened to this particular podcast, Citations Needed. Now, if you think this podcast is like a little bit too political for you, you should probably steer away from this one because this is all politics all the way down. Mm. This is basically a critique of the vaccine methods and how it's mostly a kind of a racist thing, you know, that like a lot of the rich white countries are getting the vaccines before the quote global South. And it goes into a whole bunch of other things about that. And also some really interesting discussions about Israelis' vaccine policy, which I'm just going to park there and move on. Mm-hmm. So I'm not getting into that here. If you want to hear the whole story, jump over there to that particular podcast. We'll throw a link to that in the show notes. Now, speaking also of podcasts, another podcast that I have mentioned probably more times than I should probably on this on this podcast, another music podcast called Radical Research. Their latest episode that they just put out a couple of days ago was all about the Australian metal band Alchemist. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure you must be familiar with Dave.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. So they went all in and talk about their entire career and all their records and so on and so forth. That is a very, very good episode. You all should check that one out. And the next one they're going to be putting out, which they teased in the episode about Alchemist, is an episode about everybody's favorite prog guitar player, Steve Hackett. Mm-hmm. So if you're not a subscriber to Radical Research, or indeed a subscriber to this particular podcast, you should subscribe to both of them.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we're going to have a little bit more on Steve Hackett a little bit later when I give you my thoughts on his latest album, which Hoggy gave me for homework last week. Now, speaking of other podcasts that you speak of a lot on this show, Fish on Friday, also a great band, by the way, but Fish on Friday, that fish from Marillion fame.
Yes.
Now, podcast is now available on YouTube.
Well, it was a podcast. The problem was he does all these Facebook live streams on, you know, every Friday at 6 p.m. British Standard Time, which is about 2 o'clock in the morning for me and about 5 o'clock in the morning for you. Very unhelpful. So for the longest time, it used to be a podcast feed, but that hasn't been updated in probably 6 months. Mm-hmm. So what Fish and Fish's people have done now is thrown all the Facebook live streams up on his YouTube channel. So if you are in need of some live stream content, it's mostly him answering questions from fans and playing some music and talking about his life and stuff like that. It's really interesting. Go and jump over there and check that one out.
Absolutely. And it is a great podcast too. I have managed to listen to a few episodes, not a whole heap, but admittedly, but you know, enough that that you can get the gist of it being a pretty cool podcast.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a several hour long live stream every Friday for the last 9 months or so. There's a hell of a back catalogue to wade through, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the last piece of follow-up that we have here in this episode is one for you, Dave. You little bastard, went to go and see Anubis a couple of nights ago.
I did.
Up in Katoomba. So tell us all about that. How'd that go?
It was fantastic. They played two sets. So it was actually just them. I was expecting it to be, you know, they have a support and then they go on a little bit later, which was totally fine for me because I had to drive back from fucking Katoomba after the show was done.
But the Blue Mountains people, they love to come and support gigs in Sydney, don't you know?
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely fantastic. There's just so many of them. Yeah, so the actual gig itself was fantastic. They played, as I mentioned before, they played two sets. They played the entirety of Homeless for their first set. And then second set, they did a whole bunch of other fun little ones, including...
Tell me they played Silent Wandering Ghosts as a closer.
Of course they did.
Hey!
Of course they did. so, you know, I mean, the first, as I mentioned, the first half of it was all, you know, the Homeless album, which was absolutely fantastic. And then they did, you know, Tightening of the Screws, Technicolor Afterlife, The Holy Innocent, The Collapse, Silent Wandering Ghosts. Just brilliant. And I actually managed to drag a friend of mine with me. And Riley, hello. I know you'll be listening to this episode very soon. Riley's actually in the show that I'm in. And on the Saturday, so I'll back up. On the Saturday, we actually had a big photo shoot up the mountains. So it kind of worked perfectly that I was going to the show as well. So Riley said to me in the afternoon, he's like, hey, you keen? I said to him, I'm going to this gig. Does anyone want to come? And he was like, yeah, I'll come with you. And he came and he was sort of expecting, you know, there's me with my now past nipple length long hair and, you know, beard and all that sort of stuff. I think he was expecting a thrashy thing. And he got there and he had the biggest smile on his face like all night. And we walked out. I said, you looked like you enjoyed that. And he was like, yeah, they were really fucking good. And I'm like, yeah, they are. They're awesome. So, yeah, new convert. There you go.
I'm sure the boys will be very proud. Your check's in the mail.
Look, the room itself was absolutely fantastic. The mix was left a little bit to be desired, and you could tell as well that they hadn't really played together for like 18 months. You know, they were tight, don't get me wrong, but there were some little things that just weren't as polished as the last time I saw them, just simply by virtue of not having, you know, a year-long practice run of practice sessions, essentially, for large gigs.
It just occurred to me, actually, the last time we saw them play was probably the last time they did play.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not aware of them going on any tours anywhere. I don't think they've played any other shows. So the last time we saw them play at Progfest,
it was actually, there was their last show. Yeah, their last show, which, funnily enough, was 2 years and a month before this one. because that was the 27th of January. This is 27th of February. So
good lord.
Back up
for a second. You're telling me that a band didn't play live for 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
Good lord.
Yeah. So you know, or at least you know that's what's coming up on my research. So I'm fairly certain that that is correct. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the last time that they actually played live, at least in Australia, because I can't remember if they then took off overseas in 2019.
Or nah, I don't think so.
If that was the previous year, they'd have
been putting the record together, which came out early 2020, and then then they couldn't go anywhere at all.
Then they couldn't do anything. So, you could kind of tell that they weren't as polished, possibly, as the last time we saw them. But the level of which that they were polished was insane, considering that. They were fantastic. They were on point. What's the one thing that's going to fail?
Oh, it's always the keyboards.
Yep, and indeed it did again. to the point where basically the keyboard shat themselves. So Anthony went over to try and help with the tech problems that were happening with the computer and so on and so forth. So Dave just took over playing the bass. and it was nice. Really, really, really good, right? It was just this moment where I was really pleasantly surprised to see it because they genuinely looked like they were having fun, and there was quite a bit of banter between the band and people in the audience and so on and so forth. It was a sold out gig, which was really, really good to see, albeit a small sold out gig considering, you know, restrictions and all that kind of stuff. But it was great, and it was great to be back watching some live prog music in probably one of the least live music orientated cities in the world. So
But restrictions? What sort of restrictions are we talking about? Is it like 50 people, 100 people? What are we talking about here?
It was actually 50 people.
50 people,
so, but the capacity of the room is actually 96, so it was 48 or something like that versus 96. But those restrictions actually got changed like... the week prior or something.
Oh, right.
So they were able to actually upgrade it to 100 packs, but they didn't look like they were actually going to sell out. So they went, oh, no, we won't worry about it because it's better to have a fuller room, especially considering they did a live recording of it with video and everything. And unfortunately, then it just ran on and sold out really, really quickly. So they were like, oh, we probably could have done it. But it was probably better for the actual, for the live recording. So it was very, very interesting. It was a great evening. The Baroque Room were really, really fantastic. Myself and Riley hadn't eaten all day. So we actually wound up getting some food across the road and bringing it in, even though we totally weren't supposed to do it. So, you know, they were actually really, really good about it. And just I explained the situation. They were like, look, that's fine. But, you know, da-da-da-da-da. So it was good. It was a really, really good, it was a great gig. The guys played extremely well. I would actually love to get them back on the show to talk about, now having played the album live and everything and obviously playing under restrictions and playing under lockdowns and what that is, what that's actually like.
Oh, I'm sure we can work that out. I'd say so. Anyway, that about brings us to the end of the follow-up. So now we're going to jump into the news. And, well, we've only got one news item for us for you this week, and it's a big one. And it's actually a rather sad piece of news. Literally just before we started recording, there was a news report that came out that legendary Australian rock promoter Michael Gudinski has passed away at the age of 68. Mm. Now, for those of you outside of Australia who don't know who Michael Gudinski is, basically, he is the biggest rock promoter in this country. If you've been to a big rock gig in this country at any time in probably the last 40 years, chances are he probably promoted it.
Mm-hmm.
The Rolling Stones, Paul McCartney, Madonna, Bruce Springsteen, all the big rock acts that came through Frontier Touring were promoted by him.
Mm-hmm.
And also as well, the big names in Australian rock and roll that were signed to his record label, Mushroom Records.
Yep.
Skyhooks, Kylie Minogue, Jimmy Barnes. Any of these names ring a bell to people?
Mm-hmm. Split Ends, the Skyhooks, Neil Finn, Mm-hmm. Eskimo Joe in the more recent ones. I mean, you know, you talk about some of the people that he's brought to the country. You know, not to name, just to name a couple. You know, you're talking Ed Sheeran, Taylor Swift, as you mentioned, Paul McCartney. You know, you don't get many bigger names than that. And it is really, really sad that he's gone. You know, when you die and you have people like Bruce Springsteen tweeting out, "I'm really sorry to hear that."
Yeah.
Like that's, guys, that gives guys you an idea. Midnight,
guys from all over the spectrum, like, you know, rock and rollers, journalists, mm-hmm. everybody, just generally considered to be a very well-respected and very well-regarded man in the industry.
Absolutely.
And it's a big, loss.
Mm, it really is. There's no official report on how he died, but there was a report earlier on that he had suffered a heart attack in his sleep. So, and that was literally yesterday at time of recording, or yesterday morning, maybe yesterday, last night. So this morning they woke up to the news, if that makes sense. Age 68 and very, very sad, news. But I mean, you know, this was a guy who he won an ARIA Special Achievement Award in like 1992 for his work within the Australian entertainment industry. He made the 2006 Queen's Birthday honours as well, where he got an MOA for service to the entertainment industry.
I think that's I think you'll find that's an OAM.
He was
Order
made
of, Order of Australia.
Yes.
Order of Australia medal.
Yes, he was
OAM.
Made a member of the Order of Australia is where I was going with that.
Yeah, OAM.
You know, it's just very, very, very sad to see that he is gone. So very sad news, unfortunately. Yeah, and the only piece of news we really have.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking, it's like, yeah, he was the big guy, the big promoter in this country, and bring it out. Like, who's going to pick up that mantle now, especially in the way the economy is going at the moment and the way the world is at the moment? It's like, who's going to pick up the mantle now for bringing it, for continuing, you know, to bring these people to Australia, which we know is hard and we know is difficult and costs a lot of money. Who's going to do that? And who, and where are the like, you know, we mentioned all these people that were signed to his record label and were brought up through the industry. And it was like, well, who's going to do that now? Now that he's gone.
Yeah. It's a really good question. And the unfortunate thing is about the music industry, despite the fact that most people in the music industry would like to see the giants fall. And by the giants, I mean your Sony, your, you know, Warner, et cetera, et cetera. They'd like to see them stop existing. You know, for numerous reasons, including pay issues and, you know, the stakes in streaming services and all that sort of jazz. The problem is when they go, there's such a vacuum. And this is something that we haven't really touched on the show before. But that is, once those big juggernauts of the industry go, as you rightly say, who takes their place? There really isn't anyone, at least in this particular instance. There is no other Gudinski. I mean, yes, there are, you know, his company will obviously live on and maybe it'll be run by his wife or the C-suite or what have you. I don't know what the structure is of Frontier Touring. But, you know, kind of like Apple, and I'm not a big Apple head. I don't own any Apple products anymore. Once Steve Jobs was gone, the company went down the shitter, right? Everyone you speak to will admit that. And to an extent, I mean, whilst he was still there as well, but he was pretty sick and so on and so forth. It didn't have that vision anymore. And I fear that the same thing will happen for Frontier Touring. It would be nice to see them maybe focus on Australian acts for a while and actually start to re-promote Australian acts and particularly focus on the things we do well, which funnily enough is metal and metalcore and all that kind of stuff. It'd be really nice to see them do that.
We do those things well, but we all know where the big touring focus is going to be.
Oh,
it's
going to
be on those older named established acts.
Mm.
Hey, let's see if we can get fucking Midnight Oil back out of retirement again for one lot for another go around. Let's see if we can get Jimmy Barnes in, or let's get, you know, it's just going to be the same sort of nostalgia boomer rock acts because they're the ones that bring in the big money.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, much akin to, again, this is going back to that power vacuum, right? So, I mean, if you look at what Gudinski did in the early days in the 70s and so on and so forth, with, you know, the Skyhooks and Chain and all those guys, there was him, there was Glenn Wheatley and Michael Chugg. They were really the big three influences. You know, if it weren't for Glenn Wheatley, he wouldn't have the FM radio network in Australia. He built the Triple M network. It was the first FM radio network. You know what I mean? When everyone said that he couldn't do it, he went and bloody well did it. Then you had Gudinski, who was booking bands and bringing bands out. And, you know, between the two of them, that was the success of the Little River Band. That was the success of the Skyhooks. That was the success of, you know, the Angels.
John Farnham.
AC/DC in the early days, all that kind of stuff. You know, so these massive, 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 massive names wouldn't be there without them. And obviously Michael Chugg, who is very much touring and so on and so forth as well. Gudinski lent more into the A&R and finding new bands and all that kind of stuff. And Chugg was much more into the touring side of things, which is why when Sound Relief happened back in 2009, it was such a monumental fucking success. The lineup for that was fucking massive. I don't know if you remember the lineup for that.
I remember portions of the lineup. I know they had Midnight Oil out there. They had Powderfinger and Silverchair come in to do that as well.
I can't remember Silverchair. I can tell you that it was split across two stages, obviously, because there was the Sydney and the Melbourne stage. But in Sydney, you had, because I was there for it, it was Coldplay, Wolf Mother, the Hoodoo Gurus, Little Birdie, I think, Architecture in Helsinki, I want to say, UMI, Josh Pike, Marsha Hines, Eskimo Joe, Taylor Swift, Jet, Kylie Minogue. There was the Presets, the Barry Gibb, I think, and Icehouse. And then in Melbourne, there was, I think, Jet, because Jet and Wolf Mother did this thing where they actually played both gigs and they flew to both sides, which was really cool.
Right. Sort of like a Live Aid sort of thing where one flew to the air.
Exactly. I know Midnight Oil was at Melbourne. Split Ends, Hunters and Collectors, Crowded House, Casey
just
Chambers.
Just like basically the big names of like 80s, early 90s Aussie rock.
The
only thing that was missing was Jimmy Barnes.
Well, I mean, that was the thing, right? At the Sydney show, the day was opened by Coldplay. You know what I mean? Like it was not, they were not pulling any punches. And John Farnham joined Coldplay and did You're the Voice with them, which was amazing. It was mind-blowingly good, right? It was just amazing. And there was actually a hilarious moment where Chris Martin was told by security he wanted to do a stadium run, and security told him he couldn't do it. So he went, fuck is, I'm going to do it anyway, and just started like running through the crowd. There's a great thing. If you've got the DVD, you can actually watch the security guards actively shit themselves. It's hilarious.
Because they're thinking, oh, God, if he gets hurt or gets beaten up or whatever, we're going to lose our jobs.
Exactly. But, you know, it was Gudinski and Chugg, really, that put that show on, and a few others as well. I mean, you know, some others that are I'm pretty sure on the billboard. But
it was those two, like the big sort of heavies of the industry that got that thing together and sorted it out and did the deal.
Absolutely. And I think they put it together in something like 3 weeks. You know, it wasn't something, shows like this and tours like this are often planned years in advance. At the very least 11 months, if not like 18 months in advance, you know what I mean? Particularly considering it was the SCG and was it SCG or ANZ? No, SCG. You know, they did it in like 3 or 4 weeks. They put it all together. It was just amazing. Just absolutely, absolutely amazing. And the question then is, as you rightly say, is there going to be another person like that? And the answer is probably no. Who actually gave that much of a shit about the industry. And, okay, was paid well to give a shit about the industry. We're not going to shy away from that, right?
But also as well, like, so far as we can work out, like I said, no one's had a bad word to say about him.
No.
He's never been embroiled in it. It's not like Harvey Weinstein or anything like that. There's been nothing of the sort like that. These big artists that continually came to Australia and would come to Australia using Frontier Touring with Michael Gudinski. I mean, those guys don't stick with a promoter just because they can. They stick with them because, A, they make them a lot of money, and, B, they actually get treated very well when they come here.
That's right. That's, absolutely correct. I mean, there's another thing as well, and, I mean, this is not necessarily a reflection on the quality or character of a person. But, you know, normally these people that are in these massive, high, powerful, polluting jobs and so on and so forth, even, you know, rock stars and people in the music industry, people in films, et cetera, you know, these people who seems to be somewhat related to how much money someone is worth, you know, by the time they're 68, they're often onto wife number five and, you know, eight kids and all that kind of stuff. This guy had one wife and two kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that tends to show at least his stickability, if nothing else.
Indeed.
You know what I mean? Where I think there's a lot of, it's too hard now, we'll just get rid of it kind of thing in today's day and age. But, so very sad news coming out of Melbourne today, this morning. The question is who's going to replace him? And, hey, well, stay tuned. We'll see who does it. though I suspect it's going to be like a Mif Warhurst situation where once she left Triple J, it all went down the shooter.
Yeah, it all went down the chute from there.
Mm. Actually, quick question, Hoggy. Speaking of tours and things, I mean, we are starting now to come out of COVID. And, yes, there was the stuff we spoke about last time with COVID and all that kind of stuff and the jabs and all that sort of stuff. What do you reckon's going on with Progfest?
Well, at least from the conversations that we had with people inside Wild Things Presents when we were trying to put together ProgAid last year, the complete unmitigated disaster that was, like, they told us it took them damn nearly a year to put Progfest together. So that's probably like a year removed. Like, let's say, okay, the last one was in 2019. 2020 didn't happen because I'm not sure why it didn't happen. They just said it wasn't going to happen.
There were, I believe, and people can quote me on this and fact check me if I'm wrong, but I believe that Eli was a bit crook. He had some health issues, so they had to bow out of it. And as it happened, it probably wouldn't have happened anyway because...
Exactly.
COVID.
Exactly. So. As it turns out, it probably would have been a big financial disaster anyway if it did go ahead, because it would have gone ahead right in that sort of COVID sort of start of the thing.
Yeah.
Hasn't happened this year again for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. So it's like, but is it going to happen next year? I don't think it will. It's like, I don't think it will be. And like, I think the earliest time we could possibly see a Progfest is 2023. Because they told us it takes a damn nearly a year to get the thing together.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
Even if they started now, you still wouldn't see one next year because no one knows whether they're going to be able to tour at all next year. Mm. No one knows what's going on with border restrictions. Everything's still running rampant in America, which is where all the major headlines are. Mm. Europe is currently buckling down for a third wave of COVID-19. So, like, I don't think we're going to get one until probably 2023.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean,
even just like touring within Australia at the moment seems to be rather hard. Carnival just recently announced they've basically had to bin off their Australian tour. They are going to play two shows. Yeah, they are going to play two shows here in Western Australia.
Yeah,
but that's it.
Yeah, well, I mean, they can't getting across and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly. And also, by the way, it's a damn miracle that they're actually going to play those two shows here in Western Australia, given they just did an entire tour of the state 2 months ago. I can guess a lot of people are going to be like, I don't know, I might give this one a miss sort of thing, you know?
I don't think so, man. Vooligans are pretty – like, I mean, over here in Sydney, I've got mates of mine who are literally going, hey, if they're going to stream the entire, you know, Sound Awake 10th anniversary thing – let's do it in a cinema. Let's hire a cinema out and just get everyone to pay for it. Like, I'm not kidding. People are genuinely considering doing that, just booking a cinema for the night. Yeah.
Damn.
I know. It's insane. It's genuinely insane. Will I pay for a ticket for that? Probably. But that's not the point. The point is...
Depends what it is. Yeah.
No, it's... I mean, you know, the fact that the people are talking about doing that, I mean, Carnival... Prog fans in general, as you'd well know, Hoggy, they're a strange bunch.
And a very passionate bunch.
Yes, absolutely.
I, of course, would know absolutely nothing about any of those sorts of things.
Didn't you marry one?
Yes, and also as well have flown multiple times halfway across the world for a gig.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another story for another day.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's another story we've already done in various other shows. Click back through the back catalog to find those ones.
I was about to say, links in the show notes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it's a really good question that you ask. I mean, it's also goes to the future of festivals and the future of shows in Australia. I mean, there was an article the other day, I think it was on news.com.au. So, I mean, you read everything that they said with a giant salt lamp sitting next to you so you can lick it word for word. But they said, oh, you know, Australia is leading the way in music festivals. And I looked at it and said,
really?
You fucking serious? How badly is everyone else doing that Australia is leading the world in anything to do with the arts? Right?
Well, they're leading the way in the same way than the way that, like, restrictions and the COVID-19 virus are still rampaging its way across the world in various other places. So nobody else dare bloody get them, like, have a large gathering of any kind.
Yeah, but I mean, this is like that ice skating thing, right? Where Australia is coming first because everybody else fucked up.
You know, right. You're talking about pulling a Stephen Bradbury.
Bradbury. That's the guy I couldn't remember the name of.
Links in the show notes if you have no idea what we're talking about.
And if you haven't no idea what we're talking about, pause the episode, watch the video and come back because I guarantee it will make this whole section way funnier. But I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me that we are leading the world in anything to do with the arts. I mean... For starters, we're not, period. But the fact that these guys are out there saying, oh, you know, we're leading the world in music festivals. No, we're fucking not. There are no music festivals. There was one announced the other day called, like, the Next Exit Festival or something, which is, you know, your usual jangly Triple J sort of sound sort of stuff. And, look, that's fine. I don't know.
Which I'm sure they put on the bill to actually get Triple J to plug a damn festival, which we wouldn't know anything about at all.
Oh no, not at all. No, wouldn't have any idea about how hard it is to get those people to do anything for you. We are in a real problem now. I mean, there was another article released only a couple of weeks ago, probably just after we did the last episode, Hoggy, and it was something like 35% of all musicians in Victoria are considering leaving the industry. And I believe I sent it to you and the unofficial third host of the show, Joshua Batten, and said, gee, didn't we see this 12 months ago in the UK? It's almost like history's repeating itself. And it is. I mean, for fuck's sake.
This happens all the time. If you want to have a look at what's going to happen in Australia in 12 months' time, all you got to do is look at what the English are doing now. Like, it always comes around. Like, what they tried to do with the public transport system, that started in England. What they tried to do with outcomes-based education in this country, started in England. Mm-hmm. It's just all the time. It's always the thing.
Yep, absolutely. And look, to be fair...
If we actually had some sort of larger colony that we could leave from, I'm sure we'd be trying to push some sort of Oz exit in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, probably. I mean...
The only people we can tell to fuck off are the Commonwealth, and now doesn't really do anything for us anyway.
Well, them and the Queenslanders. But, you know, it's all no offence to my people that live in Queensland. You know I love you.
Hey, here in Western Australia, we've got a state election coming up in a couple of weeks' time. There's actually a party running like a WA exit party, and it's like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, but what all that matters is where do their preferences go, and if they're a Wexit party, then it's probably the Liberals, which means you shouldn't vote for them. But no, look, at the end of the day, the question becomes now, and considering in the light of obviously the death of Gudinski and the way that the music industry has been going for some time, is maybe not so much, you know, when's this next festival going to turn? When's the next iteration of this festival going to come up? When's the next XYZ band touring and so on and so forth? The question is, who's going to stump up the money to actually do it?
Yeah.
Right? Because touring, we've been over this numerous times on this show. The economics of touring in Australia is at best fucked, right? I mean, it's extremely difficult to do anything, particularly with the amount of red tape, you know, that's around. And the ignorance of people and the arrogance of people who have been established in the industry for so time who don't remember what it was like, probably partly because things have become so litigious now that it makes putting any kind of gig, any kind of an event on really difficult. Because you've got so many initial outlays and costs on insurances and this and guarantees and blah, 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 and contracts and all the bullshit that you have to have because people are assholes.
There's that. And also as well, I suspect there's like a rose-tinted glasses kind of look here.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
back in, you know, we used to wake up at 10:30 in the night, half an hour before I went to bed, mm-hmm. eat a lump of gold poison, work for 27 hour down mill, I'd pay a mill. It's like that, isn't it? It's a Four Yorkshiremen sketch.
It is. It absolutely is.
People talk about how bad touring used to be, and oh, we used to fucking sleep on our luggage and drive for 16 hours between gigs and blah. Like, no, you fucking didn't. Stop lying.
But some bands did in the '70s. And bands still do
that
now. In the '70s,
and play for tuppence every 6 months. And when they got back, the record company would beat them with a stick. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know. But they're not wrong about that kind of stuff. That stuff did actually happen, and it still happens now. Like, they're not unique in that. The only difference is that back then, bands would always get paid. Right, so even if it was only $100 or something, and then they'd sell their merch and all that kind of stuff, it was like $100. It wouldn't have been $100 in the '70s; that would have been a shit ton of money. But you know, even if it was like $50 for a night or something, that was more than enough to put some food in your face, get you to the next gig. You know, have a bit of walking around money, maybe you know, buy a coffee or something like that for each of the four members. Now you can't even get some schmuck to pay you anything.
Also, as well, like you selling records.
Yeah.
You know, that was the other part of it as well. The tour ostensibly was to promote the record.
That's right.
Now, it's like the record is there to promote the tour in a weird sort of way.
Yeah, that's right. You bang on. And so the question becomes, who's going to stump up the money? Who's going to start the next generation of a touring company that's actually going to do the right thing by the artists, actually book the right venues for them and so on and so forth. You know, I mean, the reality is no one wants to do it. And here in Australia,
nobody wants to pay for anything.
Well, here in Australia as well,
the ticket prices are so expensive. And it's like, yeah, because it costs a lot of damn money to bring people here.
That's right.
Unless you want. See, here's the other part as well, right? Back in the 70s, you could get away with like a couple of amplifiers on stage mm-hmm. and just like dudes and a microphone, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of pub band kind of stuff, right? Now, you can't. You have to bring, you know, you've got to have, you know, there's all the gear you got to bring along with you. And if you want to bring lighting, well, you got to do that too. And if you want to bring any staging, you got to do that too. And if you want to have a backdrop, you got to have that too. Either bring it with you or hire it locally.
That's right.
That's the other part of it as well. People who like to have the rose-tinted glass about how great touring was in the 70s probably forget that the sound out front was bollocks.
That's right.
At least from all the accounts that we've heard of, when the Beatles played, you know, the fans would scream so loud they could play anything they wanted to because it didn't matter.
Well, that's why they stopped touring.
Yeah, you couldn't hear them and they couldn't hear themselves. Mm. It was a joke.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we've yelled long and loud enough about that now. a short news segment has now swallowed half the show.
I think the bottom line is at the end of the day, and this is something that will come up in an interview that I've got releasing early next week. I sat down with two of the members of the production crew from Bakery Hill and Australian Rebellion, the show that I'm in, which, by the way, tickets are in the show notes below if you want to check those out. This is something that we were discussing actually in that interview, and that is how what's the term? I suppose conservative the Australian populace is, and they don't want to take risks. No one in Australia wants to take risks. You know, we have tall poppy syndrome here in this country, so anyone that does take risks is immediately labelled as a moron, which means people don't want to take risks. Which means that the only people, it's basically the people at the top who have already taken the risk and are just sort of seen as that guy that once took a risk and now he's really, really tall and it's amazing and I can't be bothered to lean against it or try and, you know, shout them down. It's that crab in the pot syndrome. So, you know, it makes it really, really difficult for anyone in the arts. So anyway, I agree with you. We should definitely move on and talk about some new music. What do you reckon?
So we had a message sent to us through the contact form on our website from Diane Vogtland. Thank you very much for sending that through. She is part of a band called Potter's Daughter. Mm. She sent through three songs for us to listen to.
Absolutely.
Now, did you have a chance to listen to any of these songs that we sent through?
I did. What did you think?
I really enjoyed them, actually. I tell you what, she has a very different lead vocal sound. Now, that might sound like a, you know, bit of a knock against her, but it really isn't. Because as far as I can work out, there's only one kind of sort of female vocalist you get in prog rock, and it's mostly people trying to either take off Heather Findlay or Annika van Gisbergen. And it's sort of this very operatic sort of thing, and it's all very samey, and it just kind of it doesn't really do anything for me.
Mm.
And you see this all the time in prog. There are so many bands out there with this kind of vocal sound. It's not for me. Absolutely. But this is really different, and there's a lot of sort of three-part melodies going on, a lot of harmonies. It's very, very nice.
Absolutely. What's really interesting about this this lady as well and her work is that there's a lot of pop sensibility in there as well. So,
yes, very much so.
We've spoken about this on the show before, but that there are a few artists around, and arguably the really good prog artists are the ones who are able to, you know, they do the face shreddy, amazing 25-minute awesome songs that, you know, people just get ripped to. But they've also got the ability to do, to blend in pop sensibilities in there. So, you know, whether or not that's tonally, whether or not that is, you know, orchestrally is not the word that I want. Whether or not that's with the instruments that you use or whether or not that is just simply structurally, you know, you make a short 3.5-minute pop song or something like that. It does take a lot of ability to be able to do that. And there is actually quite a lot of that in all of these albums that are actually available on her Bandcamp. But there's also some great musicality in here as well. There are definite moments that are borrowed from, you know, some of the more traditional Europrog kinds of bands, if you want to use that particular term.
Yeah, totally. There's definitely a lot of, I mean, one of the songs that she sent through, you know, Movement 4, definitely sounds like something that was on a Yes record. Could I hear that in somewhere?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fragile, Close to the Edge era, Yes.
Absolutely. Yep. Bang on.
Something about that piano playing that's kind of Rick Wakeman-like.
Mm.
Or even possibly a bit of Tony Kaye, you know, one of those two guys, you know.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's the guitar work on To My Love is brilliant, just absolutely fantastic. There's some really nice sort of jazz sensibilities in there and such as well. You know, the stuff that, I'll tell you who it reminds me a little bit of. It actually reminds me of a band called Euphoria who did a piece with another big love of mine, a lady from Denmark called Tina Deco. They sort of collaborated and did this amazing electro album that was really, really, really cool. But this seems to have elements of both of those without it actually being that particular album. It's not the Precious Time album that I'm talking about, but Potter's Daughter seems to have both sensibilities of both of those bands and the electronic sides of things with some of the tones and such that are used in that and the female sensibilities so far as the vocal is concerned of Tina Deco as well. And Tina is one of my favorite female singers of all time. So absolutely fantastic. If you haven't heard of Potter's Daughter before, do yourself a favor. Note is the link is in the show notes below. Check her out. Really, really cool.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Just one last thing as well with the track that she sent through, Blood and Water. Mm. I mean, the play out at the end of that song is really great. Sort of big soaring melodies, guitar playing, and then it just stops.
Yes.
It just bang at the end. It was like, yeah, that's really cool. It's a sort of statement to make. It's very, very interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's very, very cool. I don't think I listened to anything on that Bandcamp that I didn't like. So
fantastic.
You know, kudos. If you're listening, kudos.
Indeed.
Now, the next piece of new music that we've got to talk about is from another listener of the show, Daniel Stevenson. Thank you for sending this through. New project of his called Lift. Now, he sent us a SoundCloud little link here. There are a couple of tracks on here, L1 and Voices. Did you have a chance to have a listen to these, Hoggy?
I did, actually. This is very different. This is not exactly something that I would have thought people would have sent to a prog, what is ostensibly a prog music show, but I still listen to it nonetheless. It's very, very interesting. It's very much electronica focused. So I'm the wrong person to talk about electronic music.
Well, aren't you lucky you have a co-host who likes it?
Indeed. So far away, Dave. You tell me what sort of sensibilities are we talking about here?
So
if you had to compare it to something, what would you compare it to?
Okay, so this is where I put down the prog hat for a minute, and I'm just going to do a bit of a disclaimer here. This is not prog music. It may be progressive in nature in that it's pushing envelopes so far as what people like to listen to and what is considered, in inverted quotes, music. However, it is not prog. I want to make that absolutely clear. It doesn't, however, mean that it's bad. And I want to make that absolutely clear as well. Just because this isn't necessarily in what a lot of people would consider Hoggy and mine's wheelhouse so far as, you know, the idea of this particular podcast is concerned, it's worthwhile remembering that I have a music degree. Hoggy is a big, big, big music head and podcast head, so he's exposed to a lot of stuff. I've been a country musician. I've also been a DJ. So we have a lot of different influences slamming at us. And I'm in a musical now where I'm singing like Gaston. It's very weird. But this particular piece of music was really, really interesting. In particular, I want to talk about L1. And the reason behind that is there was so much shit going on in this particular one. There's Vangelis in there. There's more modern stuff like Billie Eilish. There's stuff like Radiohead. There's a section in there about a minute 20 in as well where you have this massive amount of bottom end. And if you're listening to it with really, really good quality headphones or you've got a really nice setup, audio setup at home, the bottom end will probably hit you in the chest very hard. If you've got a sub or something like that or you're listening to it in the car, be prepared to be rattled out of it. It's just absolutely amazing. There's Bjork in there as well. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's some Aphex Twin as well. It's just amazing. This is apparently what he's linked us to is the first two tracks of the EP. And it's just absolutely, absolutely incredible. Really, really, really interesting stuff. We would absolutely... this is stuff that we very rarely will get into, this kind of really almost experimental electronica and experimental, how would you put it? I don't know. It's almost like deep electronica, experimental deep electronica music, which is remarkably, remarkably interesting to me from a composition point of view as well. The second track, Voices, is a little bit straighter. There's a bit of a Rhodes piano in there and there's a little bit more of a sort of syncopated 4-4 rhythm and so on and so forth. It's not as interesting as the first one to me. But that's me getting full music nerd. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily something that I would put on at a party, but it is most definitely something that I would hand to someone and be like, yo, check this out. Check out what is happening in this. Listen to the layers. Listen to what is actually going on here because it is remarkably interesting. And you know what? If you are listening, Daniel, I would love to see a photo of the amount of layers that you have in this song because I am betting it's either like 300 goddamn tracks or it's like 4 and you're some sort of a wizard. So very cool. Probably not in the wheelhouse of this particular podcast, but definitely happy that you sent it through. So thank you for that.
Your discussion there about layers of music got me thinking about something that I should have brought up earlier in the show, actually. Mm-hmm. This is another podcast. Shock, surprise, people. This is basically what I do with my time now, is I basically listen to podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, in related news, water is wet. Details is 11.
Exactly, exactly. The new part, the part of my job now is that I have an absurdly long commute to get to where I need to go. So I have a lot of time to listen to podcasts in the car while I'm driving. Mm-hmm. And so I was listening to the latest podcast episode from Devin Townsend. His podcast episodes are becoming more and more sporadic as he goes through his albums. But he spent a large portion of his last podcast talking about the new project that he's working on, which mm-hmm. is called The Puzzle. And this is supposed to be this. It's the way he described it is insane. I'll put a link in the show notes of the podcast so you can listen to him explain it. The shortest version that I can come up with is that he's taken like some sort of backing tracks and stuff, and then he sent the same backing track to a whole bunch of people in his life, some musicians, some not musicians, and asked them to, you know, record something over this backing track. Mm-hmm. And then whatever has been sent back to him, he's going to mix into the album. And so there's like all these little pieces and snippets of all the and it just sounds bananas. Mm. How it's going to go together and what on earth this thing's going to sound like. It sounds like the classic Devin Townsend thing. It's like, oh, okay, right, we've got a direct, you know, the record label's got a direction for him. He's strapping young lead. Nah, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm bin that off. Mm-hmm. Oh, Devin Townsend band. Oh, that sounds great. We've got a direction. Nah, I don't want to do that anymore. Bang, bins that one off. Devin Townsend project, same thing. Then comes out with a remarkably successful solo record, Empath, and now he's probably going to bin that all the way to do this other crazy banana pants project that he's working on now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll put a link in the show notes of the podcast episode. You have to listen to what he's describing. I mean, forewarned, it goes for about 45 minutes of him explaining this thing. But honestly, it was the most fascinating thing I've listened to in ages. Mm,
mm.
Just how this thing went together and the layers and the intricacies of how he's doing it. It's just nuts.
Mm, mm. Okay. Definitely check it out. I will definitely check that one out.
People should just listen to his podcast in general. It's just, it's an amazing podcast of just a collection of stories and discussions about all the albums he's written, and you know, from some of the really popular ones, you know, Heavy Is a Really Heavy Thing and Ocean Machine and you know, Infinity and the things that went on during that record, and then you know what he was thinking when he's talking about when he was writing Ziltoid and all this sort of stuff. It's very, very interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, last piece of new music that we've got here, and this is actually one of yours, Hoggy. So tell us all about it, a new Richard Barbetti album.
Yeah, well, we teased this one in the last episode that we were talking about a new Richard Barbieri record called Under the Spell, and I thought it might be interesting to have a bit of a chat about it. This record is a really, really interesting one. Sounds like the soundtrack to a dystopian future horror movie that hasn't been written yet.
Oh, so good. Such a good, accurate response.
I mean, it just has soundtrack vibes about it. It's the sort of thing I imagine you'd listen to late at night when it's raining and stormy or something, which incidentally is how I first heard Scott Walker's Jesse, but that's another story for another day.
Mm, only this album's actually good. Go on.
I put that in there just so you can take another swipe.
That's fine.
there's a lot of the synth sounds here that are very stereotypically Richard Barbieri. I mean, if you've listened to anything he's done with Porcupine Tree, if you've listened to anything he's done with Steve Hogarth, if he's listened to anything else he's done, like solo project wise, there are synthesizer sounds here you'll recognize and be like, aha, that bit come, the, you know, I heard that on a Porcupine Tree record or whatever.
Mm.
But what's different here is that there's voices that have been added in here. It's not vocals, it's not like singing, but there's sort of vocal texturing things happening slightly back in the mix. And it's really, really interesting.
Mm. Mm.
What about you, Dave? What do you think?
Yeah, soundscapey as fuck. I mean, yeah. I could see this as a soundscape to like an art cyberpunk kind of film, like a far more gritty but maybe less depressing version of a Blade Runner movie, like less noir, more sort of buddy cop-esque, I suppose, but in like a really gritty, fucked up world. You know, I just thought it was mind-bendingly good. Really short too. Like I was expecting it to be way longer than it was. I put it on when I got to work this morning, and then all of a sudden it was finished. And I was like, oh, because I was listening through and I was like, this is not that. No, this is, oh, wow, it's already finished. So really, really cool. definitely, I agree with you with the sentiment that it's, you know, the soundtrack to a movie that hasn't been written yet.
Maybe there's an idea for someone out there to actually write a movie or a movie treatment that goes with this music.
Oh, Ken Oath, that'd be so good. That'd be actually really cool. You know what? It actually reminded me a little bit of the work that Hibernal does here in Australia. The guy from Brisbane. It reminded me a little bit of that. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, his is a little bit more guitar kind of focus, where this is very much
way more guitar
synth
focused.
Loops, drums, bass kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely. Different sort of design, but definitely similar ideas, I think.
Absolutely.
So there you go. That's sort of the new music section of the podcast. This has been sort of a bit of a rambly one, but let's jump into our album reviews.
So last time on the podcast, Dave, I gave you a brand new album by Steve Hackett, Under a Mediterranean Sky. What did you think?
I thought it was really interesting. Steve Hackett is, he's a guitarist. What was really interesting about this album is the genesis of it. So the album...
If that wasn't a pun, you're an idiot. Genesis, Steve Hackett?
It was not a pun, but you know what? I'll take it. So the album itself actually was originated in March 2020. Now, we all know what happened in March 2020. The start of 2020, I should say, depending on where you are in the world. But basically, his tour, his North American leg of his tour, was cut short because of COVID. So he went back to England, and unfortunately, he didn't get his guitars out. He actually returned to England without his electrics. So basically, he was like, well, I've got all these acoustic instruments around me. I'm going to write a new acoustic album. And that's what he did. And it was awesome. It's a really, really cool album. It's sort of loosely based, I believe, on his travels, I believe, around the Mediterranean. Because, you know, if you look at the actual names of it, you know, there's Medina and, you know, Adriatic Blue, Sirocco, Joie de Vivre, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I think there's probably a bit of influence there from his travels and so on and so forth. It's really, really, really good. I don't know what else to say about it realistically. I'm surprised it didn't do better than it did, frankly, in the charts and so on and so forth, even though we know that, you know, charts mean four-fifths of fuck all, right? But it's a really good album. I really enjoyed it. You know, probably the Dervish and the Djinn was probably one of my favorite tracks off it. I just really enjoyed the track for some reason. I'm not quite sure why, but I just really enjoyed it. From me, definitely a thumb up. You know, would I necessarily go back and re-listen to it over and over again? Probably not. But that's indicative of a lot of sort of acoustic-y sorts of, albums where you don't have vocals as such.
It's interesting as well, the technical limitations of the thing. It was like, oh, I don't have any of my electric guitars. I'll come up with something acoustic instead.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It's like a change on the thing.
Mm. And when you look at the actual instrumentation of the album as well, I mean, obviously you have nylon guitar, steel guitar, tall string guitar, and then you have a charango and an oud, right? So, you know, the charango is kind of like a... I can't remember if it's an 8 or a 6 string instrument, but it's basically a little tiny little guitar sort of. It's tuned a bit differently. And then an oud is an Iraqi instrument, sort of a short lute basically. And then, you know, you've got your standard keyboards, but then on top of that, you've got flute. You've got a tar, which is an Iranian, basically like a big version of an oud kind of thing. you know,
there was also horns as well on the album.
Yeah, there's a flute, there's oboe as well, and violin and viola. And there's also a duduk, which is a woodwind instrument from, I don't know, somewhere in the Middle East. I can't exactly remember where it is.
Do you know, it sounds like the sort of album that he was like, okay, right, I need a bunch of people to play a bunch of these instruments.
Yes.
And it's all going to have to be done from home, and you're all just going to have to use acoustic instruments because we're going to record, like, we can't go into a studio anywhere and do any of this together. 100%. So we're all just going to do this from home.
It's an album of the times. Absolutely. And I think that's what makes it so interesting, is the fact that it's an album that was made in response to a pandemic, but it's not an album that was, because we've spoken about this on the podcast before, right? It seems that all the albums that were written in like 2019 were somehow unbelievably prophetic for 2020. And now a lot of the stuff that's being written in response to the pandemic, as in people are locked away in their home studios and all that sort of stuff, is kind of what we would have expected to come out. So, you know, interesting, I think. So anyway,
indeed.
One thumb up from me. I enjoyed it. Wouldn't necessarily go back and listen to it again. Now, Hoggy, I gave you an album called Perfect Storm by No Air. I think that's right.
Nah, other way around.
Oh, is it? Fuck. Yeah, it is. I gave you an album called No Air by a band called Perfect Storm. What'd you think?
I really enjoyed this album, actually. There was something there that was a little bit different, even though it was kind of your standard sort of prog rock metal kind of thing. But it's kind of in a different sort of mid-Atlantic kind of quality, which I guess makes sense given that the band is Dutch. When I first heard the thing, I was like, oh, these guys sound like American. They sound American. I was like, oh, no, maybe they're English, but it doesn't quite sound like an English prog band because the English prog bands are all pretty obviously very British. There's just something there that is very British. And it got me thinking. It's like, well, all the interesting, really interesting and the good progressive music at the moment seems to be coming from the continent. You know, there's stuff coming from the Netherlands, stuff coming from Germany, a lot of stuff coming out of Norway lately, even some interesting stuff coming from the French. It's like all the you know, sort of British and American bands that you can kind of listen to and go, oh, yeah, okay, you can see where you got their influences from Camel, they've got their influences from Genesis, they got them from some Yes or whatever. Whereas the other bands, maybe they've got slightly different influences that we haven't heard before, or I'm not sure, but there's definitely a different sound there that's interesting. And this band is definitely following along with that. So I give it a thumbs up. You should give this one a listen. Found in all the usual places. They've got a Bandcamp page as well. You can go along and pay the money to listen to it, which is very good. So what have you got for me this time around, Dave?
I have a little album that came out a couple of weeks ago. And I'm going to preface this. I'm going to preface this by saying, last year I predicted what I thought was going to be number one in January when we got around to listening to it for my albums of the year.
You're talking about Thematic Skyrunner.
I am talking about Thematic Skyrunner. I'm going to do it again with this album. This is the Downs Braid Association's Halcyon Hymns, their new album, which has just been released. I want you to have a listen to it. I want you to tell me what you think. And for those of you who don't know who DBA are, it is Jeff Downs of The Buggles, Yes, in Asia, and Chris Braid, who is a very, very big deal when it comes to songwriting and producing. It's the two of them, basically, that do the entire thing.
Is the album cover by Roger Dean? Because if it's got Jeff Downs on, it's got to have a Roger Dean album cover, right?
It looks like a Roger Dean one.
If that's not a Roger Dean album cover, then I'm not here.
It looks like one.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Alrighty, I'll check that out, and I'll report back to you.
Absolutely.
Now,
what do you got for me?
The record that I have for you is by an artist called Antoine Fafard.
Okay.
The album is called Chemical Reactions. Mm-hmm. It features Gavin Harrison on drums, which will probably give you a bit of an idea what sort of thing you're in for. I'll put a link to their Bandcamp page. Have a listen. Tell me what you think.
It'd be awesome. I will check that one out most definitely and post haste, as we say, for some reason on this podcast.
Now, you'll have noticed in the last couple of episodes that we've stopped linking to Spotify as much as we can get away with it. This week we probably will have to because we don't really much of a choice. But where we can, we will be linking to the band's or the band's Bandcamp pages or the record label's Bandcamp pages because we figure if we're going to link you to something, we should give you the option to buy it as well.
Absolutely.
If we don't have a if they don't have a Bandcamp page, they'll probably end up linking to Discogs or something like that instead.
Absolutely.
We're going to do our very best to try not to link to Spotify going forward on this show because I think we've both had enough of their sort of
antics,
attitudes to not paying people.
Absolutely. Despite the fact that I am, you know, still collating things on Spotify and all that sort of stuff. And if you want to find and have a listen to my my 2021 big album prog list and so on and so forth, that is on Spotify only because it's seemingly the easiest place for me to collate all of that together. Please send me a message and I'm more than happy to flick it across to you. But we're not going to be actively promoting anything to do with Spotify anymore. So, yeah, our small corner of the internet. There it is.
Indeed.
So, yeah, so I think that just about wraps it up for this week. What do you reckon, Hoggy?
I think so. If you would like to find the show notes for this episode, you can find them at the98podcast.fireside.fm/69. You can find us on Twitter at 98FM. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/98FM. And if you would like to, and you have the means to do so, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Now, the other thing I would also like to do is I would also like to, if this is your first episode of the 98 podcast that you're listening to and you rather like what you can hear, please, please, please subscribe on whatever podcast playing app that you have. This greatly helps us reach more people if more people subscribe using the apps. And also, if you really like what you can hear, please consider leaving us a review on said podcasting platform of choice. This also very much helps us out when it comes to getting more people to listen to the show and getting the recommendations out there in podcasting apps in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself, Hoggy. Well, thank you very much, as always, for tuning in to listen to two people scream at the internet all about prog music. Next fortnight, we will be back with another exciting-ish episode of the 98 podcast. But until then, my name is Dave Ellis.
My name is Alex Hogg. Thank you very much. We'll see you all next time.
See you then.